Good morning. There is much to cover this morning. I hope we can get it all into one talk. There are three or four principles which you must assimilate, we all must assimilate, before we can move further on this mystical path. And these are very difficult principles today. They are sweet in the mouth, but bitter in the belly, as it is said in Revelation. But before we begin, take a moment and become still inside. See if you can rest back from this mind, this human mind. It won't do you any good. It's going to take spiritual discernment to assimilate these principles. It's only with spiritual discernment that you can see what we are going to discuss today. Now, first we need to clear up something. I'm getting the same thing that I've received before from people, which is I'm hearing that they are upset because they've discovered this entire world is an illusion. And that is a very wrong assumption. So we need to go back and backtrack and cover this yet again. The principle is no illusion is ever externalized. And you will find it discussed in quite well and in depth in the book by Joel, A Parenthesis in Eternity, and in the chapter 10, Reality and Illusion. This chapter discusses this and brings this into clarity better than any chapter throughout the writings that I have come across. No illusion is ever externalized. So now let's review. To recognize that we live in two worlds, the world created by the mind, or the five physical senses, and the world of consciousness formed, or Genesis 1, is to bring ourselves closer and closer to illumination. In the first chapter of Genesis, God made man in his own image and likeness. This pure spiritual birth, this immaculate conception, is God manifesting and expressing itself and its qualities, consciousness revealing itself as form. And that is the only world there is, consciousness expressing itself, pure spiritual consciousness ising. And so to look at that pure consciousness ising and say that it is an illusion is wrong. That's wrong. The illusion is never externalized. There's only one world, and it's God's world, and it's perfect now. And you're standing in it. Well, why don't you see it? Because you're looking at the second chapter of Genesis. You're looking at concepts in your mind. That is where the illusion is forever. It's never going to be out there. Never think this is all an illusion. That is wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. Look and say, ah, I'm not seeing what God is. I'm not seeing with spiritual discernment. I'm looking through this glass darkly. I'm looking through concepts. I'm seeing my concepts about a perfect creation. and this concept is good, and this concept is bad, and this concept is young, and this concept is old, and this concept is diseased, and this concept is well, and this concept is lacking, and this concept is rich, and this concept is male, and this concept is female, and this concept is alone, and this concept has many friends. This concept is good, and this concept is evil. You're seeing your concepts, and they're not even your concepts, they're world concepts, here before you came, here after you leave. You are looking through world mind at God. So don't say this world is an illusion. It's not. This world is real. Your concept of it is the illusion. As we said before, you lock up a person who thinks that he's Napoleon, and he really believes it. He has his hand tucked in his shirt, and he's walking around giving orders, trying to take over the world. He believes he's Napoleon. Where is that illusion? Is it out here? No. It's in his mind. Where is the illusion of good and evil and all the pairs of opposites? Out here? No. It's in the mind. The mind is falsely seeing God. You're standing in God and seeing all these concepts. So the concepts are the illusion. The illusion is in the mind. No illusion is ever externalized. And in this chapter, he makes that plain. Now, it says, if we could erase from our thought everything that we have heard or read about a person, any person at all, take any person, a person that's bothering you, that's evil, a person that's good, that you love, take any person. And if you could erase from thought everything you have ever heard or read about a person, everything, every opinion that we ourselves have formed, and if we could say, Father, wipe all this away, I am willing to start all over. Show me this person as he is. Show me his name and his nature. Reveal him to me. If we would do that, we would find that by turning within with the listening ear, the truth would be revealed to us. In this way, we would know him aright. The eye of him would be born in us immaculately. And so if you could look at any person, a person that you think you love or a person that you think you dislike, and if you could throw out everything you ever thought about him and turn to God really willing and say, Father, now reveal the truth. What's really here? In your inner awareness, your spiritual discernment would reveal reality here and now. And you would be able to see what's really there. And if your friend had a problem, or your enemy, that would be healed, because reality would be revealed in its place. But all of this would be taking place where? In you. In your consciousness. That's why this chapter we're studying is called Consciousness Transformed. It's not called The World Transformed. It's called Consciousness Transformed. So, the world that we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell is the world the Master overcame. But it is not a real world. It's a world formed of our sense impressions, by what we like or dislike. This is not a world. This is a dream. This is the world of sense impressions, beliefs, concepts, theories, which exists only as a mental concept. This world of sense impressions is not under the law of God. See, it's not a world at all, is it? It's a series of universal beliefs or mental concepts. And it's in here, not out there. Yes, so he says the world that we can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell is not under the law of God. And yet, and that's circled in my book, and yet, this very world that we are living in is under the grace of God when we see through the appearance to reality. So, you want to live by grace? You're going to have to develop an inner quality, a spiritual faculty called spiritual discernment, which can see through these concepts to the reality that's there, that you're standing in. And if you don't have that spiritual discernment, then all of this is not going to make any sense to you. It's going to seem like magic. But if you do have that spiritual sense, or if you're beginning to develop it through your practice of 12 meditations a day for a minute or two or three each, then this is going to make sense. You're going to understand, ah, yes, in my deeper meditation, spiritual discernment has opened my eyes to reality. Yet I come out of meditation and I go back to my everyday life and I'm still seeing my concepts. But now at least I know reality's there. And maybe with further practice, I can see it more and more of the time. Maybe with further practice, I'll be able to see spiritual reality when someone calls on me for help, instead of a person calling on me for help. Now he gives you a clue. In this world created by the senses, the unreal world of mental concepts, mental images, we are deceived by appearances. Because in this world, unlike in my kingdom, we are faced always with the opposites. Up, down, health, sickness, life, death, wealth, poverty, good, evil, purity, sin, white, black, gain, loss. There's nothing in this world of sense that does not have its opposite. And if we analyze human existence, well, our whole life is spent on trying to turn one opposite into the other, right? We're trying to turn these bad things into good things. And we spend a whole life doing it. And so where are we living out our lives, people? In the mind. We never get outside the mind. The mind of concepts. Standing all the time in the kingdom, praying for God. God, please give me some supply. Oh God, please help my nephew. Oh God, please. We're standing in God, praying for God to fix these concepts. Which if he fixed them, then we'd have good concepts. But we'd still be in the mind. You see? Listen. In the kingdom of God, where the law of God operates, we not only do not have all these pairs of opposites, we do not have even one of them. We do not have life any more than we have death. What about that one? There's a cone for you to meditate on. We do not have health any more than we have disease. We do not have abundance any more than we have lack. None of these things exist in the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is the realm of being. But that being is divine being, not good, because good has its opposite. Not even live being, because life has its opposite, death. But being, possessing no degrees, amounts, quantities, or qualities. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. Now, in the spiritual kingdom, we ignore appearances and seek to realize spiritual truth, or to see it with spiritual discernment. To realize God's grace, God's presence, and God's power. And the moment that we feel a conscious oneness with God, the appearance changes. And now to the human sense, the evil appearance has a good appearance. appearance of lack has an abundant appearance. Sick appearance has a well appearance. But we are not fooled by these changed appearances. We know that in seeking the kingdom of God within, we are merely beholding reality appearing, the grace of God appearing. So, what we are after here is the inner spiritual faculty called spiritual discernment, which can see reality where the appearance is appearing, can see through that appearance to the underlying reality, and rest in that reality. And then, when the concept changes from a bad one to a good one, we're not fooled. We still know that the underlying reality is the truth of identity. But the mind is interpreting that now as a good picture. But we're not fooled that that good picture is the reality. We know the reality is behind that picture. Remember, Joel tells us in the Kailua Study Series, we're going to have to learn to do this with good appearances too. All right. Now again, listen to this. This is so, so important. I'm going to read all three paragraphs. Reality and illusion. Perhaps the greatest of all the Indian seers was Gautama the Buddha, whose revelation of absolute truth was so profound that while there are other revelations equal to it, there are none which have surpassed it. Gautama had the full realization of the one ego, the one I, the one self, which constitutes the consciousness of the universe. And he himself understood and proved that the appearance world is Maya, or illusion. Because of its fruitage, in other words, people received healings and were lifted out of the grave of ignorance. Because of its fruitage, his message spread like wildfire across all of India. But his teaching of Maya was misinterpreted. And that's what these people that are writing me saying this is all an illusion are doing. His teaching of Maya was misinterpreted. The belief that the world is an illusion led to a do-nothing attitude, a passive acceptance of the evil conditions in the world. His followers failed to see that it is not the world that is an illusion. The world is real. Now there you go. There's four words for you. Every time you look out there and you think this is an illusion, hear these words. The world is real. Well, then you're not seeing the world, are you? The illusion is in the misperception of the eternal, divine, spiritual universe, which is the only universe there is, and which is here and now. So there, that should explain it as plain as the nose on your face. The world is a spiritual universe, and God is ising, perfect, now, here. You are looking at your concepts, and yes, your concepts are illusion. Now, get within yourself and ask that God lift that veil so you can see reality behind it. And stay with that until it happens. And stop thinking that this world is an illusion, so you might as well just roll up your tent and go live in a cave somewhere. This world is God's world. It's the temple of the living God. But when we see it with finite eyes and ears, what we see and hear is the illusory picture of the reality that is there. The illusion is in the mind that is falsely seeing the world. The illusion is never out in the world. An illusion cannot be externalized. An illusion is a deceptive state of thought, and it can take place only within a person's mind, not outside it. All right? With our human eyesight, we see a world constantly changing, a world made up of young, middle-aged, old people, sick and well, poor and rich, unhappy and happy. All of this is an illusory picture in the human mind. But, says Joel, because there is only one human mind, it is an illusory picture in your mind and mine. But such a world has no externalized existence. It's not out there. An illusion not outside the mind, but in it. To be able to understand and grasp this idea is also to be able to grasp the idea that this illusion cannot be corrected in the outer picture. That is why so much prayer fails. People are trying to improve an illusion which, if they succeed in doing, would still be an illusion, except it would be a good illusion now instead of a bad one. So, again, on the next page, the substance of the forms we behold is not of that substance which is God. And once we perceive that, we shall understand the true meaning of the word illusion, which is our perception of what we behold constitutes the illusion. It is not that there is an externalized illusion. It is only that what we behold is not the real substance of which it is made. It is of the substance of mind, the substance of universal mind. The truth is, all that really exists is God formed. So, he says, let us not look at the visible world and call it spiritual. Because you're seeing all these things changing and all these pairs of opposites. That's not spiritual. But, on the other hand, let us not look at it and call it something separate from God. No, because only God is here. Let us cleave to the middle path, which leads to our inner spiritual center, where we are the Christ of God, and where we can see that we are one with the Father. Yes, if you cleave to that inner center and you are quiet, then God can reveal the reality behind these concepts. Only inner discernment, inner light, inner vision that beholds something the eye does not see and the ear does not hear can discern the Christ. All right? So, finally he says we are looking through the appearance with inner discernment and there beholding the invisible spiritual child of God who was never born and will never die, eternal, right here on earth. So, there's more to it, and I suggest you, if you don't have this book, get this book. Reality and Illusion is the chapter. I have never found any better chapter for revealing that principle and bringing it to crystal clarity that no illusion is ever externalized. This world is real. It's God, consciousness forming itself. Consciousness. Ising. But you don't see that kingdom here and now. You see your concepts in front of that kingdom. And the mind will never show you that kingdom. You may have an intellectual understanding of what it's supposed to be, but you can't see it unless you have that inner faculty of spiritual discernment. And you cannot have that inner faculty of spiritual discernment unless you've developed it through meditation or developed it in a past life. One way or another, you had to develop it. And, of course, grace helps lift you up into it. So, if you do have spiritual discernment, then you can see the reality that you are standing in, resting in, living in. In Him we live and move and have our being. And you can see Him, or it, or I, consciousness formed, if you have that spiritual discernment. But if you're looking through the mind and with the mind, the human mind, the world mind, then what you're going to see is the world mind creation, or this world, which is not external. It's in the mind. And that's where all the pairs of opposites are. And so what we are doing is we are, one more time, ascending up over that mind so that we can see with spiritual vision. I hope that is clear. It's very important, because if you misunderstand it, you'll be like my friend from India who tells me, this is all an illusion, and he laughs and he walks down the road and gets drunk. Because why bother? Eat, drink, and be merry. It's all an illusion. Ha ha. Well, that may be true, that everything that you can see, hear, taste, touch, and smell in the mind is an illusion. But unless you have conscious awareness through spiritual discernment of the kingdom, then laughing about it and getting drunk about it is not going to help. You're just putting it off for yet another time when you will develop this thing called spiritual discernment. You're putting off growing or coming into this higher consciousness. So remember, this world is real. Not the world of opposites that your mind is showing you, but the world behind that. There's a kingdom here and now, but only spiritual discernment will reveal it to you. Okay? And now we have a really very hard chapter in this book, Consciousness Transformed. It's going to be, if you really hear it, it's going to shock you. Shock your mind into stillness, hopefully. Because it's going to show you a couple of concepts which have kept you chained to a human life for century after century after century. But if you are ready, that's why these classes are for advanced students. If you are ready, you can drop the chains that have held you. Now, we'll just jump into it here. Joel says, in late 1938 or 1939, the voice told me I must seek the secret of the impersonal Christ and impersonal healing. I cannot read that without feeling an inner vibration, a heightened vibration. I can feel it in my soul. It's like tapping a pitchfork on your knee and hearing the hum. I can feel that same thing in a spiritual way when I read this sentence. There's something here that's an answer. Something here that is the truth. There's something here that I must know. I must seek the secret of the impersonal Christ and impersonal healing. I leave that for you to take within your being and meditate upon. It's very, well, it's the key to a great secret. And so I underline that, but that's for you to discern. Okay. Are you ready? In the Oriental scriptures, which predate Christian scriptures, we have karmic law, or the law of cause and effect, as the major law or teaching. This law has held some parts of the East in such intellectual and spiritual barrenness that to this very day millions upon millions of people are making no effort to improve their lot because of the belief that it is their karma to suffer it out in this lifetime and possibly many lifetimes to come until it has worked itself out of their lives. Now, that's what we just said. My friend from India, who misunderstood the revelation that this is Maya or illusion, placed it out here and said, well, then why bother? Well, the other part of that which was revealed as the law by Moses and even by Buddha, this is also taken up as an excuse. Well, why bother? Why bother? This is an illusion. Why bother? This is my karma. I have to suffer it out. Why should I bother to pray any prayers to see anything get better? This is my karma. It's just karma. I have to suffer it out till it's over. In Christian scriptures, they accept the teaching, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. By the way, that teaching was from Paul. I looked and I did not see where Jesus said that. Paul said that in Galatians. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. That's Paul talking. And there are millions of people in the Christian religion with guilt complexes because of some sin of omission or commission, who are unable to release themselves. The message of the Infinite Way would like to start you on a new path. Put on your listening ears. Listen. The Infinite Way would like to start you on a new path. Remember, this must be assimilated before you can go further. Not that it is new to the Infinite Way, but because you have never perceived this principle. And here is the principle. There is no karmic law. There is no law of cause and effect. No law of as ye sow, so shall you reap. These are superstitions, illusions of the human mind. These are beliefs, concepts created by men. Do you hear the depth of that? Do you understand? Can you feel that? There's no such thing as karma. And of course, how could there be? Because when you have spiritual discernment and you behold spirit, God, consciousness formed, who then could have karma? Can consciousness formed have karma? Well, it's ridiculous. Of course not. Then who can have karma? What about this person, good or evil, this human being, this concept in the mind? Can that have karma? Yes it can. But that is a concept in the mind. God never created that concept. So what law is there to back up that law? Nothing. There is no law. There is no karma. There's no law of sowing and reaping. It's been a lie. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. So, Consciousness formed itself. Consciousness forms itself. Consciousness is forming itself. Consciousness is ising. And so the substance of all that is consciousness. Now, how can consciousness sow and reap? How can consciousness, infinite consciousness, come under a karmic law? It's ridiculous. It's another man-made concept that we have suffered from because we accepted it for however many eons we've accepted it. The substance that is here is not the substance that we behold. We behold something that was made not by God, but by mind. And the something that was made by the mind has opposites. It has good and it has evil. And the substance that made that picture of good and evil took onto itself the belief that if it did good, good would come, and if it did evil, evil would come. And now here comes the voice of consciousness saying unto you, I never created karma. I never made a law. Never. Can you see why this radical Jesus person with the consciousness of God going around healing people, telling them about grace and truth, and that there was no law binding upon them? Can you see how that would just scare the Hebrews of those days? I mean, think about it. The Hebrews with their hundreds and hundreds of laws. And those very laws are what led us to civilization as we know it. Without them, we wouldn't be where we are. And yet, here comes this radical person saying, you don't need those laws. You can live by grace. Why, that would just blow their minds, wouldn't it? And have to put an end to this person. We've got to make him disappear. Some of the Hebrews are beginning to believe him. What will happen when nobody follows law anymore? It'll be like those people before Moses came down from the mountain and gave us these laws, worshiping false idols and building these temples and idols of bronze and gold and sacrificing. Why? It'll be chaos. We have to have laws. And here's Christ healing people and saying, what laws? You don't need laws. Even healing people on the Sabbath for crying out loud. How could he? It must have threatened their very existence. And so if you are not ready for this chapter today, and if it threatens you like that, I suggest you stop. Stop it. Walk away. Go back to practicing the presence or living the infinite way or the art of meditation, because you're not ready for this. But if it brings that inner feeling of that humming, that inner vibration that I feel, that says, yes, follow me, and you can feel it in your inner soul, then this is for you. It doesn't mean that the other person is any less. Please don't hear that. It means that you have to do the preparatory work. You have to prepare yourself, just as the advanced students have done. Some of us have lived with these truths for 40 years. That's a long, long time in human existence to be practicing these things. So just go back and prepare yourself. Now, for those of you who are ready, hear this. There is no karmic law. There is no law of cause and effect. No law of as ye sow, so shall ye reap. These are superstitions, concepts, illusions of the human mind. These are beliefs created by men. Those of you who are hearing this message today, and those of you who will be reading this message when it is printed, and that's us, will have the opportunity of putting this principle into practice. If it is true, it's a universal truth. It is not true only of Infinite Way students or metaphysicians or those who ask us for help. No, this is a universal truth which will set the world free. You have the right to ask, has no one ever paid a penalty for erroneous sowing? Yes, they have, because they were brought under the law. Every one of you has witnessed this law being broken over and over again. Every time a disease has been overcome by metaphysical treatment, the law of cause and effect has been broken. Every time you witness a disease of a hereditary nature healed, you have proven there is no such law. So you have already witnessed what I am bringing to you here today. There is no law of disease, no law of cause and effect, no law of as ye sow, so shall you reap. There is no such law. There is no karmic law, except what men bind upon themselves by accepting. We have been demonstrating this in metaphysics for 90 years, now over 100. But never has it been spoken of in this way, to free all men everywhere of everything, and release them into their birthright of divine consciousness, in which, now listen, this is so wonderful, release them into their birthright of divine consciousness in which there are no laws operating on them because they are laws. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the law. Catch that. Read it. Go buy this book, Consciousness Transformed, the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks, by Joel S. Goldsmith. And it's by, I'm pretty sure it's Acropolis Books. Yes, Acropolis Books. And they have a website, acropolisbooks.com. So, buy this book so that you can look at this and then put it down and meditate on it. Because this is a wowzer, if you really catch it. We have been demonstrating this in metaphysics for over 100 years, but never has it been spoken of in this way, to free all men everywhere of everything and release them into their birthright of divine consciousness. In divine consciousness, there are no laws operating on them because they are laws themselves. I am the law. Until you are released into your true identity, there will be laws operating on you. But they will not really be laws. They will be man's creation or concepts or beliefs. Now, on the next page is another shocker I'm certain that he would have been crucified if they were still doing such things. He says here, no one has a right to make laws for you, not even God. Wow. Wow. No one has a right to make laws for you, not even God. You see, there are to be no laws operating on you because you are to be the law. What law? Spiritual law. You are to be consciousness forming itself. Spiritual law. Now, let me see if I can find that where he says that here. Yeah. We have been prisoners of the mind for generations, which has bound us with laws. But there is only one law, and that is spirit, which is freeing, not binding. And so I am the law. I am spirit. I am consciousness forming. I am the first chapter of Genesis. There is no karma for me. Not for I. No, not for this I in the midst of me. There is no karma. For Christ, there is no karma. When you ascend up over the mind into your Christhood, you find no karma, no law, no cause and effect. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. Evil and good are both alike to thee. They're both nothingness, concepts in the human mind. And you see through them. You see through their nothingness to the underlying reality of spirit, the only law that is. So, the one principle, there's two principles in this chapter today, is there is no karma. Eventually, this will lead you, he says, to what is undoubtedly the deepest revelation of the infinite way. It has its source in the revelation of Christ Jesus, who voiced it in these passages. Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. The Son can do nothing of himself but what he seeth the Father do. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. I can of mine own self do nothing. My doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. And this is the second principle. You must eliminate the word I from your life. And in whatever degree you succeed, in that degree will you know successful and joyous living. Now let me rephrase that. You must eliminate the concept I from your life. And in whatever degree you succeed, in that degree will you know Christ, your true identity, forming itself. Now let's go back here where he told us in the beginning of the chapter, voice said, I must seek the secret of impersonal Christ and impersonal healing. And now we have, you must eliminate the word, the concept I, the personal I, from your life. And in whatever degree you succeed, you will know the impersonal I. In other words, you must become the impersonal I. Oh, that's not right. That's not right. You don't become something you already are. You must realize through spiritual discernment that this concept I is not reality, but the impersonal Christ I is reality. And so you must come to the conscious awareness of that, the conscious feel of that. That's where my friend that's off getting drunk is not succeeding. He does not have the conscious awareness of the impersonal Christ self. So again, let's look at it again. The voice, the inner Christ, says, I must seek the secret of the impersonal Christ and impersonal healing. you must eliminate the word I, the concept I, from your life. And in whatever degree you succeed, in that degree will you know consciousness forming itself. And then he says quite plainly, when I had my first spiritual experience, the personal I died. Certainly, I am not loving or benevolent or spiritual. Whatever qualities that may flow through me are flowing from the source. There is nothing personal whatsoever. All right, again, let's go look at it again. It's all here if you will have eyes to see, ears to hear. I must seek the secret of impersonal Christ and impersonal healing. The personal I died, he says, and when he's in meditation, there is nothing personal here whatsoever. You see? When you eliminate the personal concept of I, then you have found the impersonal Christ, and impersonal healing happens. There's nobody there to direct it. There's no person there to direct it. Your mind, properly used, says Joel over and over, is an avenue of awareness. And so the personal is still and aware as the impersonal Christ and impersonal healing, consciousness forming itself, happens. Now, again, I don't want you to misunderstand. You do not dissolve completely yourself. You're not going to ever become a nothing. There is always going to be consciousness, infinite consciousness, individualized where you are. And so there's individuality will always remain. As long as you are here, individuality will be here too. When you have this experience that there is nothing personal whatsoever, and you are bearing witness to impersonal Christ, your individuality will be Christ expressed individually, and your awareness, your mind will be aware of Christ expressing individually, in an individual way, infinitely individual, or infinite individual being. It seems strange. How can we have an infinite number of infinite individual beings and one being expressing us all? And yet we do. Infinite infinity. You can't get your mind around that, neither can I. But you can have the awareness of it. So he says, if you can eliminate the word I, you have no life to lose, including your children. And so if you eliminate the personal to where there is nothing personal whatsoever, then you are able to see with spiritual discernment, with inner awareness, that impersonal Christ expressing individually where your children are. You see, again, at the height of the deepest, most mind-shattering spiritual experience I ever had, there was still people. There was still a world. There were still trees. I still saw this world. But I also saw behind it the underlying reality in everything that existed. I saw a woman standing in front of me. I could feel her face on my face, and I could see my face on her face, and I felt the oneness behind us, the one impersonal Christ expressing individually as her and individually as me. And I could feel my individual self at the same time. So I felt a oneness with all of life. I felt infinite spirit expressing in infinite individual ways, but I also felt my individual self. That is my individual awareness of it expressing here as me. Joel tells us this is an inside job. It's consciousness transformed. It's not the world transformed. It's not even you transformed. It's consciousness transformed in which you behold reality. So, he says, you may still look the same. You may enjoy the same foods. You may enjoy the same colors. But Christ will be living where you are. And that's the truth. When I had that spiritual experience up there, when I was attending that class with Herb, afterwards, I didn't come down. It took a couple of days to come back to normal consciousness. But I still went out and had a great dinner of surf and turf, which I happen to enjoy. And so I had a surf and turf dinner, and at the same time, I looked around the restaurant and saw myself in everyone and felt everyone in myself. You see? You're not going to disappear. Your individuality is going to remain. But it will be Christ individualized and not a person. There will be, as he says, nothing personal whatsoever. So, if you can eliminate the word I, you have no life to lose, including your children's, and you have no life to experience sowing and reaping. If you say God is my life, you must trust your life to God. You must be willing to accept, I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. It is Christ living individual life, truth manifesting itself, and projecting itself into human consciousness. We are fortunate that we can be instruments or avenues which show forth God's glory. That's what you're here to do. Show forth the glory you had with God before these concepts was, before the world was. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Much more are we the glory of God when I has been overcome. When the Master said, I have overcome the world, I believe he meant I have overcome me, the me who can be rewarded and the me who can be punished. Both have to go. When 10 righteous men begin to eliminate the I, they will know there is no karmic law and no law of cause and effect. Why? Because there is no personal whatsoever. And so he says, finally, we have been prisoners of the mind for generations, and the mind has bound us with these laws. But there is only one law, spirit, which is freeing, in which I am. Only one law is spiritual, and that is the law of God, or spirit. And that law frees you from the domination of the mind. Moses spoke from Mount Sinai. Jesus spoke from the mountain from which came forth his sermon. This that I have given you today has come from the mountaintop of spiritual revelation. So says Joel, there are two principles in this chapter. And the one principle is there is no karmic law. There is no as you sow, so shall you reap. None whatsoever. And the second principle is you must eliminate the concept I and seek the secret of the impersonal Christ and impersonal healing. And when you have them, when you have found them, as an inner experience, you will experience that there is nothing personal whatsoever, but Christ liveth. So, I know we've gone, what is it, exactly an hour, but it was necessary to cover no illusion is ever externalized. It is a series of concepts in the human mind, which is the world mind. Stepping behind that human mind, or coming up over that human mind, overcoming that human mind and those concepts in the stillness of divine being, impersonal Christ reveals itself. There is nothing personal whatsoever, but impersonal Christ forms itself individually. And that Christ experiences no karma, no law, no sowing and reaping. It stands still as a witness as the Father forms itself. And again, you're back in the womb of creation, in which the Word becomes flesh and dwells amongst us. And we beheld the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. There is no karma, no sowing, no reaping. No illusion is ever externalized. It's in the human mind. Drop that. And in the silence, behold, spiritual discernment reveals that when the personal I is eliminated, Christ lives itself. God the Father, infinite consciousness, individualizes as Christ living itself. Those are the principles for today. Thank you for bringing them out. And blessings.